Thank you very much to all three of our speakers. I'd like to take a few minutes now for questions. Will you come down and answer a few questions? Was that all right? Okay. I have to say, it's a two-stage process finding this out. On the one hand, first, to find the women doing history of science who were hidden behind, the surgeon who gets the credit, or like Harry Derrick, who, she was not formally counted as the faculty, even when she had a professor. They are invisible. And then the second stage, to understand how it happened, what got them there, what they were doing, what their networks were, who they talked to. There's so much work still to be done. They're still so invisible in Canadian history. So this is really, important work that we are hearing today, and very glad indeed to hear it. Okay, questions? If you get a question, could you perhaps repeat it for the microphone? Is that all right? Okay, any questions? I'm happy to lead off, actually. Can I ask, Ruby, do you think that the Charter of Rights made a difference for women in universities, and getting the recognition, getting the jobs and the positions?
Well, the thing is that you could start to sue a little bit like what Margaret Rossiter was talking about. But as we all know, there was a difference between adopting a law or legislation and having it enforced. So I cannot say, because I have not done, of course, all the research and all the institutions to see, but certainly when I hear the leaders of these multiple organizations that were created by Women in Science and Engineering, they saw it as a very positive thing because they could refer to the legislation. On the other hand, Ursula Franklin thought of suing the University of Toronto when she retired because she did get a full pension that she deserved. And that was something she wrote about this, and there was quite a lot of media coverage about this. Maybe
what was the basis for the university's argument for that? For
not getting it was the age, if I remember. It was all those who had retired a certain date. Okay, those who left after did get a fair compensation, but there were quite a group of them. And then they decided to get together. There was a off-court settlement, if I remember. But I think, you see, Ursula, that she took her case, of course, to make it, there are laws there, but they're not always implemented. And so there is... But I think the fact that it was, and the same happened in the United States, the equal rights, amendments over there. But legislation, at least gives a reference to the activists that didn't exist before.
They show lots of lipstick, but scientifically, as though they were created in a lab to show that science is for girls. So it's all about this gender stereotypes of what a girl is, that, heels, and engineering was about how, girls can create heels. So I just wonder why we're still there, with this gender stereotyping of what girls are to begin with, and using that. I just feel that, we'll go forward two steps.
So that's a very interesting question about gender stereotyping. I think it's actually very interesting having a 13-year-old daughter and even driving around Montreal and having to look at some of the billboards and explain that commercial that's on the corner of DeCary and Sherbrooke, which that pain is always changing. I think I haven't spent my career thinking and reading about this as my colleagues have. I've lived it. And I obviously have my own ideas about it. I think we don't exist in isolation. And there are all sorts of trends that go on around us. And I was trying to sort of convey part of that. There are trends in the media. There are trends in biology. We're very biologically driven. There are trends in advertising. There are social trends which have nothing to do with the group of us that's here, but which are societal. And we don't have the only, we're not the only ones that are impacting those trends. So I think that video is interesting. There's going to be more of that stuff around because, of course, media is so easy to access. So anybody who wants to take something, you know, an idea, no matter how outrageous it is, and put it up on YouTube, can do that. And then it's accessible to everyone to see. So I think of it as the challenge is to help our daughters and our sons, as I said, to really sift through all of that. And it's the same process as understanding information in general. I mean, we have medical students and residents who don't know how to do a search on a topic in medicine because they are just so overwhelmed with information that they don't know how to choose what's important. And I think that's part of our challenge, is teaching our students and our children to sift through information, to make those choices, and to realize that just because it's out there, it doesn't make it okay.
Just a comment. I would agree with everything you're saying, except the issues that you're discussing are really much later on in life, and I think the problems begin in early life, in the first few years of life, where, you know, girls receive the dolls and the boys receive the trucks. So Mariana, I think, is going to address something like that. So, you know, how do we impact on those early years? Because that's where the stereotypes are formed.
Well, there was an outcry to this video, and it was banned, because it was an actual campaign to bring girls into science, and it turned out to be more of a sexy kind of thing. And there's actually a comment on the site that's really interesting. It was written by a man that said that perhaps we should be focusing so much on getting, you know, immigrants to have more of this, and, you know, the social justice element so much, and focus more on getting people who are competent in each of these fields, and to focus more on the competencies as opposed to the genders. So, I mean, we could argue that for hours, but I found that interesting. It's a different point of view. So, I found that interesting. But if you have a chance,
yeah, where is it?
On YouTube.
That's where you find everything.
It was the European Association of Science or something. They were trying to, it was a campaign to promote girls in science. And it flopped, basically. It did. It lots of women scientists, astrophysicists were upset about it. Yeah, I guess.
Any questions?
Sort of give my own personal view on this, because I went through most of those decades that you talked about, and I didn't find the discrimination or the resentment or anything like that. First of all, I was in honors math physics. We were only two girls. The other one was Chinese, and we were pretty well at the top of the class, and there was no resentment. As a matter of fact, I think that there was a lot of support from the male colleagues, and that was in the late 50s. Then in the 60s, I was in medical school. We were only 8 out of 120, and again, I think we were sort of looked at very positively. And as a matter of fact, our class, which is now coming to their 50th anniversary next year, made a John Abbott, Margaret, what is her first name? Maud Abbott Award for all the girls in our class as a Lifetime Achievement Award. And the other thing is, I don't think that we really identified at all with the ongoing feminist culture. As a matter of fact, it was quite strange to us. I was at a meeting once, and another group where there were a lot of females from the very beginning is in genetics, and there certainly was very little discrimination. So I was at a meeting once in the States of the American Society of Human Genetics, and in the same convention center, there was a meeting at the same time of a feminist group, and it was we just walked by and saw all their stands with various literature, and it was, you know, it was just foreign to us. And the funniest thing was that the washroom, which was entitled Powder Room, they had crossed out the D.
No, I think actually what you're saying fits a bit with what I found also. I studied more the engineers and those in the applied sciences, and as I mentioned, there were some tensions as well between women scientists and engineers and feminists and women's studies, for example. They didn't talk to each other that much, and there was some fear as well with what was called at the time maybe the more radical wing of the movement. That being said, clearly, I would say that most women in science and engineering would not disagree with the idea of having equal pay for equal work, or not be discriminated against for promotion, which was part of the liberal feminist agenda of NAC of the time, in which the government, actually under Pierre-Éliott Trudeau, it supported that, these goals. Especially, you know, the status of women in the workplace. So I don't think they would have been against this, but you are right that there was not a dialogue, full dialogue between the groups.
I was just going to make a comment about that, because it's actually a question I've often asked myself, because I've often felt the same way and felt that, you know, if I had to have an honest discussion now with most of my female residents who come and ask me for advice, I can't really say to them that I've experienced discrimination. I can't say that I've experienced hardship. I can't say that I've, you know, I've had to fight my way for various other reasons, but, you know, not because I'm a female, I don't think. But I think that, you know, you are probably at this end of the bell curve, right? You're that 10% that achieves that such a high degree of competence that it's unarguable. And I would submit that for those who kind of really get to that point, it's true, it's unarguable. But if I look at I go back to my daughter now, who is in high school, the majority of that bell curve that sits in the middle, that's made up at least half of women, who don't necessarily get to that, that's where I think the work still needs to be done. Because I think that, equal, if you had a file of, you know, that experiment that you, that paper that you were talking about, I think that many of us who kind of did things as maybe as perfectly as possible, got very lucky, we didn't have to face that. But the majority of women, even in industrialized nations, and let's not talk about non-industrialized nations, which is the majority of the world, are not feeling that. So I think although many of us might relate to what you're saying, I think our work going forward is not just for people who get to our point, it's for people who are much less fortunate than we are. And even in not the much less fortunate, you know, in other parts of the world, people who are kind of in that middle class of females.
Well, I am going to have to cut us off here because we're not going to have any break left if we don't stop. This is a conversation I hope we will come back to continue this afternoon. Thank you very much to our speakers for a wonderful session.